Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and this is just an impromptu little special. We are delighted. We're going to skip all the formalities because this woman is very busy and is actually dying to not be busy anymore. Aoife Grace Moore, Aoife Moore, how are you keeping?
I'm grand. I am very heartened. Everyone's been very nice and supportive over the last couple of days. So yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, no, look, and it's great to see journalism shown under a good light for so long, because we do, and you know, we all take shots all the time, and the work and of your colleague Paul Hosford, two young journalists. I know Paul was long of the journal and then stepped away from journalism for a while and now is back, and you know, that's a hell of a story to break.
Yeah, it kind of, by the time we started working on it, and within a few hours we realized, you know, this is a pretty big deal. But it was only, I don't think either of us had any idea just how big it was going to be. It was only when the story went live and the public's reaction to it, I think me and Paul were both a bit shocked. Like, we both had to like take some time away to be like, what have we done?
Yeah, no, it's actually made a government that was already limping along fall to its knees, and that's my analogy. But it really has. Like, I mean, let's tell the truth. You were already writing about the problems they were having before this happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's an unhappy marriage by anybody's, you know, estimations of this. Like, there was a long drawn out negotiation period. Ironically, everyone thought the Greens were going to be the issue in this government. There was a long drawn out negotiation period, and I've actually kind of been reflecting on that in the last couple of days and thinking now, like, the signs were there from the start. Like, if they took that long negotiating, there was obviously these real differences. You know, there's a lot of distrust. As much as people like to think they're all the one, there's a lot of distrust between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and there's a lot of background politics going on, and it's systemic. It's systemic in this government, and they can't get a message together, and they're just walking into rakes all the time. And I think this is obviously, and I think this is why people have reacted so badly to the story, is because they're already so frustrated.
The reason there is distrust, though, is because it's been actively fanned. And this is me speaking, obviously, but I said it when they formed. Within days, it was clear to me that members of Fine Gael were already briefing against themselves, and the Greens were already an unhappy. Many of the Green members were unhappy with the whole thing from the outset. So it was clear that it was only pinned on the fact that Fianna Fáil really need this to work. And it just feels like when you, even yesterday, the Taoiseach is, I'm calling him the Taoiseach because he's behaving like the Taoiseach. The Tánaiste is announcing that the lockdown is going to continue in Kildare before the Taoiseach actually does.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on, and I think it serves to undermine Micheál Martin's position. Now, Micheál Martin himself said that he doesn't buy into it. You know, it's just a narrative around Leinster House and he doesn't pay much attention. That's fair enough. Like, he doesn't have to listen to the narrative around Leinster House, but it's how the public perceives him is an issue for him as well. So I do think there is a lot to be said for Micheál Martin taking Leo Varadkar aside and saying, you need to play the game here, because I think by anybody's estimations, he's not being very fair.
I agree.
Can I just say I'd be the first to welcome next year's Young Journalist of the Year. Sorry, Jack. You're not going to get it 2 years in a row. I was listening to you on the radio this morning, and you were talking about when you first contacted everybody who was involved, that this wall of, sure, what's wrong with that, came at you. And somebody made a very good point that you were being gaslighted. And it was a very, very good point that you were being gaslighted. And I want to know, what did that feel like, that moment when that was happening to you?
I do think it's reflective as well of how bad the government's message has been, that it was so garbled that no one seemed to really know what the restrictions were. And then with the people that I was speaking to, and I know Paul spoke to a few people as well, they were trying to convince me, like, move along, like, nothing to see here. And a few of them who I spoke to over the phone, a few, it was all men that I spoke to, but a few of them, you know, tried to convince me that this was all above board. And because they all seemed remarkably calm about it as well, you know, the way, like, when you phone someone sometimes and they know, you can tell in their voice that they've been caught and they seem a bit spooked. I didn't get any of that from anyone in the first couple of hours. And I said to Paul, when we were writing the story, I was like, maybe this isn't that big a deal. And Paul was like, this is definitely a big deal. It was just, when I look back at it now, it was incredibly strange how chill everyone was considering the fallout of this, what the story has been.
It's Game of Thrones significant is what it is.
Only insofar as I prefer it. Do you ever see, what's the... There's another variant on that, Martin, where he said you used to get ahead by being better than the guy next to you. Now you get ahead because you're so incompetent that the guy ahead of you just slips up on you and falls behind. And hey, presto, you're on top. And there's a little bit of that about it, about, you know, watching a government commit Harry Kerry right in front of you in so many ways. Can I ask though on the journalistic side of this? Obviously, there's been pushback, and you felt a little bit of the establishment, for want of a better term, pushing back on you. How have you found though? Has the public though must have been much more receptive to the story, and much more receptive than actually you probably gave it. You thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, like, I don't want to get too corny or emotional here, but, like, the reaction from people, they have been unbelievably kind to me and Paul, and they seem really, really grateful, I think is the word. You know, people have been sending really supportive messages, but I think from the reaction to the story, just in that sense, that people are just so angry and they are so frustrated. Like, the Examiner gets emails every day from readers about different things, but I can only describe it as a flurry from when the story went up on Thursday night. We received emails from teachers, doctors, nurses, people in lockdown in Kildare. Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone listened to Liveline on Friday. Everyone heard the anger. Everyone heard about, you know, saying goodbye through iPads, and that's what it means to people at this stage. Like, I think the funerals thing is going to be always a big thing, and it's how we're going to remember the lockdown, is the funerals, or lack thereof of funerals, because they are so important to Ireland and such a big part of our culture. So yeah, I think this story has just, I think it's just the straw that broke the camel's back. I think the Irish public and their goodwill has been carrying this government for weeks. And there's no more patience left.
Can I ask a simple question? Could you not just give up to what, you know, what reasonable people say, and adopt that soft mid-Atlantic accent people want you to talk with?
Yeah, so for people who don't know, naturally, I went on Morning Ireland on Friday, and within minutes of being on Morning Ireland, a gentleman didn't email me, actually emailed the Irish Examiner to give off about how I speak and give off about my grammar, and he spelt grammar wrong. So there was that. But like, as a woman and a northerner, like in public life, briefly, it's sort of to be expected at this stage.
It is, but it's also, I think it should, it's the trope of a woman on the internet as well. It's the reply guy. It's all of those ugly things that we see. And then there's a little bit of classism in it as well. And then there's obviously, you know, as I think I referred to it when we were speaking earlier, as the golf dad. Happy either, you know.
Someone called me an apologist for Dara Cleary today, which was new considering, you know,
yeah,
I was part of the team who wrote this story, where he lost his job over, but because I think I wasn't baying for blood on the Brendan O'Connor show, I'm now an apologist for Dara Cleary as well. So I'm all things to all people.
Yeah, and I think that's actually, I've seen that, where, you know, we all read our own biases and are into situations like that, and I have to be careful of that myself. But can I ask, where do you think, like, I put it to Martin yesterday that Phil Hogan will be gone by, what did I say, Martin?
Tuesday, Wednesday.
I said Monday lunchtime, Martin.
Did you say Monday lunchtime?
I said he'll get into work on Monday morning.
That's right, on Monday morning. Yeah. I don't know if you're right about that.
He is
standing behind the desk with a 2x4 and he is swinging. So I don't know, will he be gone? Europe is a different business. It's a different business.
Aoife, do you mind if I ask your opinion of that? What do you think?
Yeah, and like, I've only been in Dublin 2 years, so obviously I don't know Phil Hogan as well as the rest of the Irish public. Of what I do know, he is very much his own man. Yeah. I don't know, Martin's right. You know, Europe is a different place, and if he had have had, you know, the same kind of position as Dara Cleary, I'm sure he would have resigned already. But I do think he is going to try and use the oncoming Brexit crisis as a shield and say, you know, I can't go now. You know, Ireland needs me, Europe needs me. So it really kind of depends on how untenable his position becomes, you know, in the next few days. But the Taoiseach is saying that it's not in his gift to sack him, which is true. He can't sack him because he doesn't work for him. But they could make representations to Ursula von der Leyen that they don't have confidence in Mr. Hogan. So we'll just have to wait and see. But I do think, I think he might hang on.
I'm confident in this, but I just think it's on the basis that, you know, we always say that you can't, that the EU is anti-democratic and it's not answerable. And there will be, unfortunately, this will stoke that a little bit more the longer he holds on. And that is a concern of mine, because I'm not a Eurosceptic. I want to see reform, but nonetheless, I do think that this sends a bad message when the Taoiseach of a country can't actually hold accountable people who are, if in effect, you know, they are our elected representatives after all. Just to bring it back though, we mentioned the Greens, and you were speaking about the fact that they have worked well. Members of the Greens have put pressure on the Eamon Ryan to recall the government. Your understanding that was that he wanted a joint statement, so not to cause to be seen to go outside.
Yeah, he was put under pressure from his own TDs that they needed to be seen to go back to the Dáil. You know, the Green TDs have become really uncomfortable in the last couple of days over how this has been handled. So representations were made to Eamon Ryan that the Greens need to do something, and they basically told Eamon Ryan to go to Leo and Micheál and say, listen, we need to go back. He didn't want to be seen to force the government's hand, so they went for a joint statement that went out last night under an embargo, and then the embargo was swiftly broken. So they're going back now. They said they're going back when the schools go back. But yeah, from what I understand, Eamon Ryan didn't want to be seen to be making waves, so they went for a joint statement instead.
In the big picture,
Whilst Hogan is a big scalp for anybody to go after, the actual more important story or the more important aspect is Judge Wolf. And I've seen just now that Vincent Brown has tweeted that he must go. I can't see any way to get past this. There is just no way past this. Is that where the story's going next?
If Vincent Brown says it, then it has to be true. But the people's Taoiseach. So the thing is with Seamus Wolfe, I think the most galling thing for people is that he is the former Attorney General. People don't know much about justices. They don't know much about judges. These people don't have a big profile in Irish society. However, he is the former AG. He has apologised, and he's very much, I think he's put his head down and hoping that it blows past him. But I think that I can't obviously guess. I don't know the justice system that well, but I can't see how his position is tenable at the minute. It just is a monumentally bad judgment. Like, it was just such a big lapse of judgment.
And I can tell you that as someone who has, and Martin, you're the same, who's campaigned for a number of years now, along with many others, for things like the right to housing and protections for people. He was the Attorney General at a lot of the times where we were told the Attorney General's advice has told us that, you know, this is unconstitutional, we can't do this, we can't do this. And he had a target on his back already in terms of that, because, you know, there was people on in opposition said, publish the advice, let's have a look at it. And now he's done this. I genuinely feel I don't think his job is tenable, and I think he needs to be held to full account. And I do think we have a problem with the office of the Attorney General as it is in Ireland, given some of the ways it's been used. It's like the money message, you know. We have this bit of legislation, but we use the money message to say we can't enact it. And now we often saw, based on the rules of it, based on the advice of the Attorney General, we had a conversation earlier. There was a few of us on, including Saoirse McHugh and that, and we were talking about where the lifespan of this government. And I'm on the record saying that they were going to go to 4 years, and it's looking worse and worse and worse, my prediction, by the moment. What's the sense of people you're talking to in terms of, are people worried about the ability of this government to go on?
Yeah, well, just from my own colleagues in the media, I've been told that if they have another election, it'll be all my fault, and they're not very happy. but speaking to people, I think the issue is, I think the Irish public has no appetite for an election because of COVID. It would be a huge infrastructural task to try and sort it out. So there's no real, when I say there's no appetite for an election, I don't mean it in the way that they don't want change. I just mean it as in people are already so confused with COVID guidelines, and it's just another stress that I just don't think that they want or need at the minute. But what they do want is a better government, not necessarily, like, I don't even know if I mean like not a better, but being better at their jobs. Like, if this is the government that we're saddled with, then surely they should be better at it than this. There's three parties there.
Yeah.
Can I be very forward and ask, how many more societies have you found to investigate?
You know, I found out just after the story went up, there's actually two Oireachtas Gulf societies. So,
gosh,
yeah,
that's and what I suppose someone there's a chess society and a bridge society and a bingo society
I'm not invited to any of these things.
as someone who spent a long time at a golf society things, you're not missing out, guys. It's awful stuff. It's awful stuff. But that is it, though. That Martin raises a really important question. Sorry, what they refer to as muckraking. I'm assuming there's a lot of it going on right now.
Yeah, I'd say every newspaper and broadcaster and journalist in Ireland has been getting taps all day, every day. Someone called me this morning from France to tell me something. And I probably should be worried about where you got my number, actually. But yeah, it's been nonstop because there is such an appetite now for this. It feels like it's such a turning point moment. And I have to say, although me and Paul, you know, we broke the story on Thursday night, there's been Trojan work done in the last few days, digging out more and more and more of this. So yeah, I think there's definitely momentum. So I just don't know when it's going to all blow over.
Sorry, Martin, I thought you wanted to come in. You raised your hand.
No.
Maybe you're just scratching your eye. No, the piece you did write on, you know, about Liveline, about your own experience and about how things have, how it captured the public mood and why this anger is, you know, I don't know if you heard or if you've seen the book Angrynomics. I keep referring back to it, but we spoke to the author of it, Eric Lonergan, and it's about the fact that he uses the quote that when people said about people going out protesting for Black Lives Matter, and they were, you know, it was some TV host said, you know, why are people out in the streets? And the representative for Black Lives Matter at the time said, if we weren't out on the streets, what would it say about us as a society at this time? And I think that is actually the essence of this. We should be mad. The stories that you told and that people have actually spoken about and shared, that is a righteous anger. It's not tribal. It's not just because it's Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. It's actually because of a shared lived human experience over the last few months. And I thought you captured that very well. It's not much of a question. It's more of a statement. But you really got a lot of good feedback to that, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolutely surreal. Someone sent me a screenshot and I was trending along with Prince Andrew. So I don't know what that says about me. But yeah, it's been really surreal. And like I've said this before, like I don't listen to Liveline very often, but I obviously, you know, made a point to listen to it on Friday when I was in the car. And yeah, like I ended up lumping my throat like 3 or 4 times. And I'd say a lot of people did. And this is the thing. It's not a certain section of society, it's absolutely everyone. Like we have been united in the fact that all of our lives have been changed and all of us have made sacrifices, and everyone is just really, really cheesed off is the nicest way I can put it.
I think Simon McGarr, was it last week, Tony? He said if you're 3 days on Liveline, you are done. As a government, you're done. And I can't say that anything the government has done this weekend is going to prevent a 5-day run on this on Liveline. There is nothing I can see that's going to prevent that.
I think it's definitely a time for a regroup. I mean, Micheál Martin really needs to get people back around the cabinet table, and there needs to be some serious chat about where this government is going in the next 6 months, because I think there is just so, everything is so up in the air, everything, like people are looking for direction, people are looking for like one solid voice to say, okay, this is how we're going to do it, this is us moving forward. So I really believe now that Micheál Martin needs to stop pretending that he doesn't hear the chatter around Leinster House and about Leo Varadkar, and sit people down and say, this is the plan for the next 6 months, because I don't think they can plan any further than that at the minute.
And I think that's I think what you're going to see is, and to use the old Reboot Republic thing, you're going to see a reboot. It does seem to that they have to come together now and say, well, we're going to put on a united front. How united it's going to be and for how long it lasts, I don't know. But it's certainly the public demand it at this stage, because we can't have continued mixed messages. We can't have talks of kids driving trampolines to school. We can't have, you know, we need better messaging. And it's so crazy. It's infuriating to think that the government that's going to spend, it'll have the biggest budget ever again on communications and advisors and all of these teams and PR and press officers, and they can't get any of their messaging right, and they can't stay on the same page. Back to the actual job at hand, though. Yourself and Paul, when did you both started the same week, wasn't it?
He started a week after me, so I started at the end of February. I think he started in the first week of March. So we haven't been there that long.
Yeah, so you're senior to him, really, now.
Yeah, I'm his boss.
this is a different off topic question. Have you felt during the time, though, that I suppose in some ways we've seen the appetite for the media has actually gotten better, even at a time when advertising revenue has fallen off a cliff?
Yeah, I mean, the pandemic, I think, has really proved to people how important trusted news sources are. I mean, there's been so much confusion. There's been, you know, so many scams. And because so much of the pandemic is unknown, being able to turn on the TV and trust people like Richard Chambers and Zara King has become really important to people. Mm. So, and over this weekend, I was actually really heartened to see, you know, how grateful and appreciative that people were about the Irish media, because, you know, like it or not, and like you mightn't like everyone, and you know, people have different issues with different papers, but if we're not here, these things are not going to be reported on.
Yeah.
Were you surprised at the speed at which it was amplified on social media? I mean, it was immediate and it demanded immediate response. While it's not new, it's very, very fast this time. It's very, very fast.
Yeah, I mean, by the time we put the story out about 7 o'clock, I tweeted it while I was on the treadmill at the gym, like it went live. And by the time we were putting the front page over to the printers, the story had already changed, and that was within 3 hours.
Mm.
So it was, I think as well, and this is another thing about the pandemic, news on people's mobiles, like everyone is constantly reading the news now, and whether it's like for hate reads or whatever. And it was just, it's one of those things as well. I think I forgot to make this point earlier, but I do think it, the story is like a perfect encapsulation of what people already thought was Leinster House was like.
Yeah.
And it mightn't necessarily be true, but it fed into this narrative that there's these golf societies and they're all best friends and they all go to these dinners and they look at us like plebs. And that's obviously not the case, but you know, it feeds into a wider narrative.
Not all the case. Not all the case. But no, there's certainly, no, but there is a Leinster House bubble, and it's definitely, it's, I always go back to Lynn Rowan and what's Martin, what's the people in Dolphin's House name?
Anna Liffey.
No, Dolphin House. You bloody interviewed them. But they're talking about the fact that, you know, there's not, if you're doing the job in politics, you have to be out once a month.
That's right.
Rita Fagan is the lady's name, and she is a legend and a hero. And Rita Fagan said, the reason you lose sight of, you know, you think that who's up, who's down, and what's happening on the WhatsApp group is news, is because that's what you're encapsulated by. You're losing touch with people, and that's this story. Gave legs to that idea that there's an us and them. The last thing I'd say, and it is again to give the negative side, and it's probably better if Paul was here, but Colette Sexton's behaviour was most unbecoming as someone who was a journalist only a couple of weeks ago. How do you feel? Did you feel was it good to see solidarity amongst your colleagues and the support there, or as equally shocking as it was to see someone do that?
Yeah, I would say I never really doubted the solidarity in the Irish media. To be honest, our patience has been pretty fraught during the pandemic with how the government are dealing with journalists. So it's not just the public that are annoyed. I mean, they have given us, we sent out, you know, press invites to press, to conferences with 10 minutes notice. They have been picking and choosing who they want to come to different events. And in the end up, I think we had to make representations through the chair of the Oireachtas Press gallery, you know, to have a sit down and talk to them about how they're dealing with press relations in the pandemic. So we've all kind of been united by the fact that our patients had already been worn thin. So there's a lot of solidarity there anyway. And I do think, you know, with what happened to Paul, so if anyone doesn't know, Paul attempted to ask a question about Gulfgate, and Colette Sexton, who is Stephen Donnelly's new advisor, said that he couldn't ask it. He could only ask about the questions about the Kildare local lockdown. The audio of it is actually quite funny. You can just hear Paul saying, nope. Oh, wow. So, but
a good strong Dublin accent on Paul as well.
Yeah, very good.
And I think that I actually think Stephen Donnelly let Colette down as well, because Stephen Donnelly, who is the minister, should have stepped in and either said himself, I'm not answering questions on Gulfgate, or answered the question.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And it goes back to this lack of transparency that we were talking about earlier. And I think the changes that need to come, the first change has got to be more open decisions. We need to know what's going on. When we're left in the dark, we'll make up our own stories. And they have left us in the dark. They really have.
Yeah, and you lose goodwill, and we're not going to get through a pandemic without the goodwill of the public. And I think a lot more openness, and this is like, I know this was what the last government kind of struggled with as well, you know, feeling empathetic towards people's actual everyday struggles. So I do think they need to get a better handle on communication, because look what happened in England when, you know, Dominic Cummins took off and wasn't seen away in the rules. You know, everyone needs to play the game, or we're not going to get through it. So the government really needs to get a handle on their communications in the next couple of weeks.
Absolutely. And I think things like yesterday's stupid march in town rammed that home, whereby you have people who go, well, if they're gone off golfing, I'm going to do this, you know, and they're not necessarily going for the same motivations. And then they become useful pawns to bad faith players. And you know, and it gives that sort of stuff. And you do lose control. And I'm thinking now of when we were actually live recording when we heard about the story had broken, and we were on with Professor Anthony Staines, who was telling us about the need for better communication in that actual moment, wasn't he, Martin? He was literally saying, He was saying how, you know, Micheál Martin is an effective communicator. He needs to grasp back the narrative and give people a sense of purpose and a sense of unity. And then Ewan actually read out what your story was. And the good professor, who is unapologetically, he's a Fine Gael supporter. He almost put his hand in his head, head in his hands, even. And it was just one of those moments where you're going, okay, this is going out now, and you're just thinking, wow, this is going to change everything, and everything I've just said the last 2 minutes is just blown up, basically. We're not going to keep you any longer. You have done Trojan work, you and your colleagues. It's you've got a bit of annual leave coming up, and it's well earned and well deserved.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Not at all. I really appreciate you finding the time to talk to us, us two losers again.
Yeah, I was just on with the World Service, so I was like the World Service, and then Tony and Martin.
You were on BBC, were you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, if there's ever been a good promo, Martin, we have to edit that. Went from the World Service.
Yeah. We on ours first. Yeah, and next time first.
Yeah. Aoife, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Aoife.
No bother at all, anytime.
Listen, folks, I hope you enjoyed that. Again, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. It really helps. We're doing all this, but you know what? We appreciate anything you can do. Price for a cup of coffee. We'll actually keep it coming. Talk to you all soon. Bye-bye.